Today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
Now, my next guest is one of a very small number of surgeons in Ireland and Britain trained in the subspeciality of trauma surgery. And late last year, he spent 2 weeks in Ukraine with an American NGO training medics and civilians. Morgan McGonigal is a consultant trauma and vascular surgeon who's based in Waterford, and he joins me on the line now to tell me about the work that he has been doing. Good morning to you, Morgan.
Morning, Claire.
Thank you very much for joining us this morning. So it was October of last year, was it, that you went to Ukraine?
Yes, it was. It was several months into planning, but that particular mission was set in October for the Dnipro and Zaporizhia region of Ukraine. It had been relatively peaceful before we went, but unfortunately, the weekend we arrived, the Crimea Bridge was blown up, which sort of escalated, as we all know, Putin's sort of reaction towards Ukraine. So it made the security detail a little more difficult for us going in. For example, although we were based in both Dnipro and Zaporizhia, only a small group of us actually went to Zaporizhia. We were given the choice to stay in Dnipro or travel to Zap. So I was one of the small group that went to Zap on a daily basis.
And you were selected by the World Health Organization, weren't you, to travel there?
Well, the WHO has a mass casualty planning program, and a course which we've actually brought to Ireland, and we have a mandate from the HSC now actually to bring mass casualty planning throughout our health service. But the lead for that particular course hand selected a number of us from around the world, so I was very happy and very proud to go with International Medical Corps, which is the NGO. WHO are not an NGO, so they don't go in that capacity. Mm-hmm. But it is their course that we went. Amongst other courses, we were really there to give sort of first aid skills to bystanders. We had a stop the bleed program for paramedics. We also have a damage control program for hospital staff and surgeons, and mass casualty, which was the other mandate that we had to bring to the region.
Damage control strategy. Tell me a little bit about that, because that's not something that they had in place there, am I right?
Well, no. And unfortunately, the concept of damage control surgery, which is relatively new for a lot of health providers, hadn't really, and still isn't really, in the mainstream education of and training of the surgeons in the Eastern Bloc. I mean, we're very lucky in the Western world, really, that we have, you know, our training really is very, very high level. But really, I went with another NGO to Palestine to teach the same course last July with the David Knott Foundation. But damage control surgery is a sort of, it basically has one focus: to stop a patient bleeding to death, because in a war-torn situation or a penetrating injury situation, the number one cause of death is going to be bleeding. So that was part of our mandate to go and teach that in Ukraine as well.
So what was it like there? I mean, you spoke about the escalation when the bridge was blown up. Was it like living in a war zone where you were?
Yes and no. I mean, it's almost like being in no man's land at times and being in a different time zone altogether, a parallel universe in many ways, because there were hours and hours where it was quite peaceful and people are going about their daily business, followed by, you know, the air raid sirens that go off. You get an alert on your app on your phone. You would take to the bomb shelter, which we spend a lot of time in the bomb shelter. You know, schools looked empty, playgrounds were empty, a lot of fields, crops weren't harvested, some burnt out machinery, burnt out tanks. In the Zaporizhia region, we had excellent security detail. We really did. We were due to stay there, but it was deemed too dangerous. So we decided to travel up and down, which does have, obviously, its own anxieties traveling up and down. And in fact, a number of times we were delayed getting there because of drones that we got security detail on flying over Zaporizhia region. There's a curfew for the Ukrainians. When we were there, it was 11 p.m. For us as international, it was 10 p.m. And you weren't allowed out of your facility before 6 a.m. in the morning. Hospitals were busy, but busy with the normal everyday sort of hospital issues that come on a daily basis. The hospital at the time in Zaporizhia had not been targeted, although you know, they were always on high alert, and the drone attacks were obviously of grave concern at the time.
So they weren't bringing soldiers then, for example, from the front line into the hospitals that you visited?
Not when I was there. A lot of the military hospitals that are makeshift, that are actually on the front line, and we were 35 kilometers from the actual war zone front line. They're actually secret, top secret hospitals, and they are. You have to get permission from the Minister for Defence and the Minister for Health for NGOs to go in there. And certainly when we were there at that time, they were being extremely strict on who they were letting in for security reasons.
But down the line, the hospitals that you were in are likely to be dealing with casualties of war, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, I would forecast that what Ukraine will need probably going forward is reconstruction, a lot of reconstruction, orthopaedics, plastic surgery. But when you're dealing with a war zone situation and the attacks on logistics and on energy and on roads, getting a patient, the real fight starts after you save them and you want to undergo reconstruction surgery and rehabilitation, because there are so many different facilities involved. You need time, you need space. And it's very difficult to do that while you're also fighting an acute war on the front line. Very difficult.
And what was the response of the people who you were helping to train, Morgan?
They were absolutely delighted to have us come in and to teach and to integrate. And, you know, it's very important you don't go in with an imperialist attitude. We're here to show you. That's not the case. We're here to integrate and to work together and to show you a way that has been tried and tested in the Western world to show you how to manage these particular injuries or, you know, a mass casualty situation. The one thing that they were lacking actually is tourniquets. There's a world shortage, or certainly was at the time, of tourniquets, and we brought some with us, but one of the big US manufacturers just cannot keep up with the demand for tourniquets going to Ukraine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just going back to what you said about damage control surgery, because Ukraine has been relatively peaceful up to this time last year, or just after this time last year, they don't have much experience in that. Compare that to the United States, where I know you've previously worked. They have huge experience dealing with traumatic injury.
Yeah, I guess the US has been involved in many wars, and they also have a very mature, very robust trauma system going back to the 80s. And I think when you live in a society, certainly a lot of the urban areas of the United States where gun crime is a huge problem, a lot of the big urban hospitals like in Chicago and Philadelphia, each hospital will be dealing with 8 to 10 gunshots a night. So you get very... very good and very experienced very quickly when you've trained in that type of environment. I don't think anybody really, can train for exactly what you're going to expect in a war zone, because the problem is when you're dealing with explosions of military magnitude, like what Russia is doing, the majority of people are either dead or they're actually walking and okay. There's very little in between for a while until things start to get a little bit more messy. And I do think going forward that damage control would be more important on the front line in the military hospitals as we head into its second year now. But then beyond that, we're looking at reconstruction, because the whole idea of saving a person's life isn't just to save them. You want to reconstruct so that they can go, be assimilated back into society and to mitigate being a burden on society and a burden on themselves. Mm-hmm. So it's all interconnected. But really, with the war zone, it's the attacks on logistics is the biggest issue. And even the nuclear power plant, we were only 37 kilometers from it, and there was no power supply going to it. And we were given a countdown of how many days it would take for a meltdown to happen, which is kind of scary when you're that close to it.
I'm sure it is. What drives you to do this? You mentioned you were in Palestine previously.
Like a lot of Irish doctors and British doctors that I've met overseas, it's a sense of purpose, a sense of doing the right thing. I mean, the war in Ukraine is having a massive effect on all of Europe and the world as we see it, the economy. And I think for some people, we want to do our bit.
And you think that as a country, we could do more in terms of bringing Ukrainian medics here, upskilling them and sending them back then with those skills?
Yes, I think rather than reacting to a situation of just bringing Ukrainians in who seek asylum, which is the right thing to do. I would like to see us, and most Ukrainians you speak to want to go back. Most do not want to be in Ireland or anywhere. They actually want to go back. So I think, you know, just like Europe after the Second World War needed to be rebuilt, Ukraine's going to need to be rebuilt. I would like to see us take the lead more in this country, as they're doing in the NHS to a certain degree, of upskilling both the doctors and nurses, because you won't come across a profession that is more hungry and thirsty for medical training than healthcare. And it's the same at home.
And you're going back, are you, this year?
I've been approached by a few NGOs for missions, which I'm giving some consideration to.
Okay, well, Morgan, thank you very much for joining us. So interesting to talk to you. Morgan McGonigal, consultant trauma and vascular surgeon. Let's go to the newsroom now and to Brian Jennings.